Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, in about a half hour, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. It'll be good to get his perspective on the Chiefs' win against the Giants. Also talk a little bit about some of the storylines across the NFL, including some of these undefeated teams and what he makes of Jackson Dart getting his first start this coming weekend after Russell Wilson was benched. And I don't know. Do you think Russell Wilson ever starts another game in the NFL, period?
Because injury and this other stuff, yeah, probably, because I don't think he's just going to retire. My guess is that Russell's still trying to find a place that at least let him compete for a starting job against a bad rookie quarterback. He'll start like five games for the Panthers next year.
You think he'll
request
release? They'll
draft a new rookie. They'll cut Bryce Young. They'll sign Russell Wilson. They'll drag their feet with every guy they take in the top five, and then he'll start five games for the Panthers.
I was wondering, do you think he requests his release?
I would. And I would try to go become the Cincinnati Bengals starter. Like, why? I mean, dead serious.
Oh, please make that happen.
Why wouldn't I? That'd
be hilarious.
Like, and I get it. For a few games, they will trust that Jake Browning is good enough to carry him or to, like, make them viable. He has another game like he did the last time, and they're 2-2. You telling me they won't kick the tires on old Russell Wilson if he was on the street? That'd be kind of crazy. Or Jameis Winston, if he had requested his release. Now, Jameis also knows his role and where he is in the NFL now versus Russell Wilson has been actively going in search of the easiest places to be a starting quarterback. So yeah, I think he'll continue to try to make starts. I think he'll make a start. I think he's done being the week one starter for any NFL team.
So Ross Tucker will join us in about 30 minutes. Also, Josh Vernier, Royals insider, coming up at 12:30. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube in particular. That way you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Before we get into some of those 3-0 teams in the NFL, we had Nate Taylor on the show yesterday, and we were talking to him about the offense and basically the belief in still this offense getting better and how close are they actually? Because you had said, hey, look, we've heard this. We're close.
For over a year. And I'm trying to separate the 2 years because of the injuries, but it's hard.
I thought a lot of what they said last year was, hey, man, we're not going to have at any point in the season because of the Rashee Rice knee injury, we're not going to have our three wide receivers. Well, that's kind of where the offense was entirely built on. And we kind of promised Travis, hey man, we're not gonna run you into the ground again. Sorry, bud. Hollywood got hurt, Rashee got hurt. Please give us another, like, you know, lead the team in receptions, lead the team in yards. Hey, stay healthy, obviously, and then like come find us in January, and then we'll put it all together. And actually, that is what happened. Like the offense did really, really well around Christmas. Because they got Hollywood back, because Kelce had managed himself through the season, and obviously Xavier Worthy grew so much in his rookie year. I don't know if it's going to reach his full potential because, again, like, how much longer are you going to give Juwan Taylor? Like, what's going on with his knee, basically? Because there were times where he got beat Sunday Night Fellas, where I was just like, hey, man, that doesn't look like you. You're a really good pass blocker. Why are you getting overwhelmed basically at the snap of the football? So, again, will we ever see a snap of Hollywood, Xavier, Rashee?
Still waiting.
I don't know. If the Chiefs cannot run the ball successfully against a Baltimore Ravens defense that cannot stop the run, then I don't know. I don't think they're close.
So that was Nate Taylor when he joined us yesterday. He joins us each and every Tuesday here on Cody and Gold. I think the question always is going to be, until we actually see it, will we get to a point where they have everybody that is supposed to be available, full personnel, to get the clear answer. Now, every single team deals with injuries, And so, you know, how many teams throughout the entire 18 weeks of an NFL season have their full arsenal? Not many, right? If somebody gets hurt for a week or whatever. Will we see the Chiefs get to a point where they have the offensive line intact with Brown, with Rice, with Worthy, all in the wide receiver position? And I'll throw Thornton in that mix now as well.
Yeah.
With Kelce. Will we see that? And if we do, is that just automatically going to vault them to a top 10 offense? Or are we still going to say, well, until they fix the running game, that's not even possible anymore?
I think it's more important about fixing the actually feeling like the pass blocking and blocking is fine, even more than the running game. I think that they can be a good offense without fixing the running game, or just having a mediocre running game, if that makes sense. And I think that they could be okay in that circumstance, considering it. But also, I don't have the same level of confidence that I once did. There was a good chunk last year when they were saying, we're close, it's going to get there, that I bought in for 4, 6, maybe even 8 weeks. And as they got towards the end of the season, I'm like, there is no fix. There is no, it's close. Now, but last year I also knew Rice was never coming back. So like I could just give up on the like, oh no, it's right there. We've almost got it. And while they did play better football in December and January, as they typically do, there were still limitations inside the offense. I'm holding on to like a 15 or 20% chance, but that's about it, of Rice and Worthy will come back, and this is a top five offense again. It should be.
Yeah, I don't know about top
all the
five.
Money on the offensive line, all the money on the offensive weapons. It should be a top five offense.
I don't think it can be that even when they come back, if everything went perfectly, because of the issues we're seeing with this running game right now. And so unless suddenly it is either, you know, Isaiah Pacheco gets some things corrected, or they trade for somebody, or they use Breshad Smith more, I don't know if you can be top five with a running game that is struggling in the way that it has. Can they be, you know, the 9th to 11th best offense in football if we get to a point in a month or so when there's Rice, Worthy, and Brown, and Thornton, and everybody all together? Yeah, I think that is feasible. I understand the first half against the Giants was so ugly, so people are saying, well, it doesn't really matter. There's no way. I think with all those players back, they can get there. I just don't know if you can have any top five offense in football if your running game has been as bad as it is. Like the reason why you're top five offense is not just because your passing game is electric and big play potential.
No, normally you can
have
some sort of
complimentary running game, and they don't have that yet.
They don't yet. I've seen it a couple of years ago, although I would just say Pacheco's gotten worse. Let's look through, because this is probably a good judge of how you're doing it. Let's look at the top five offenses in the NFL this year. Do they have a complimentary run game? A test. Yep. Baltimore. Yep. the Colts. Yep.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor.
The Detroit Lions. Yep. Buffalo. Yep. We're not getting that far down. Seattle would be the one where at least put Charbonnet. That's definitely Walker. That's certainly not complimentary. We would go in there. Once you start getting 5 through 10, though, that's where I would say they have a complimentary run game, but I'm not out here like banging the table telling you, wow, what an unstoppable monster Washington's run game is. I'm not saying they don't have good backs, but it's more complimentary to your point versus Baltimore, Indianapolis, Detroit, and Buffalo. All those teams can just straight up run the ball and have some of the better run games to go with some of the better passing games in the NFL. Those to me are different. And to your point, I think there is a world in which Pacheco can be a complimentary piece the way Chicago gets that in their run game at times. And I think that because they're top 10, and I think that there's a way in which you can do that, but I'm not putting it better than 50%. Like I would have assumed going into the season, I thought it was going to be more like this is the 8th or 9th best defense, and it needed to be the 6th or 7th best offense or better, somewhere in that top five or fringe top five range. Now I'm right back to where I've been the last 2 years. All right, defense, if you don't mind, go ahead and be right in the other opposite spot. And can the offense get back into that 10 to 12 range gold that got them to the Super Bowl last year, and hope you just play a better game than last time?
913-586-7965. Someone says, you know, since Kareem, you know, haven't had a good running game, originally the first year Kareem Hunt was here, and they've been at 5 Super Bowls. Yeah, the conversation we're having right now is Cody brought up, can they be a top five offense? Not can their offense be good enough to get to a Super Bowl? That's not the debate in the question that we're answering. If you're saying, can the passing game get full go with Rice, Worthy, Brown, Thornton, and everybody, and the running game still struggle, can they get to Super Bowl? Yeah, of course they can. That's not the question, though. And ultimately, yes, that's the goal. So maybe you don't care if they're a top 10 offense or top five offense. But you brought up, can they be a top five offense? And I'm saying they cannot be a top five offense without having a better running game.
Yeah, and I think it's more, and I'm not saying, yes, agreed, that the running game has to be a little bit better. But I think a lot of that is going to come down to what I had said about like where they should be, the offensive line. If it's a little bit better, I think everyone will be a little bit improved. It won't stop Isaiah Pacheco from running into the back of his offensive lineman sometimes or missing an assignment. He's done a good job blocking. He's done an okay job in some other spots. But there are issues where that aren't solved by better offensive line play. Admittedly, not solved by better offensive line play. But I do think that if they just play a little better there and Rice and Worthy come back, you know what it is? I so badly, even if it's for a game, can I just see it once? Can we get to week 7 when Rashee Rice is back and week 8 when Rashee Rice is back? So maybe he's got a week of like run up. Can I see Rice, Worthy, Hollywood, Thornton, all on the field together for a game so we can actually get a sense of what you've been trying to build for 2 straight years? Because that's the one thing that stands out to me most about can they be a top 5 offenses. Brett Veach ran the exact same plan back. He said, no, that plan was good. We just didn't get to see it. We never got to see it. So I'm going to do that again and just watch this time. It'll work.
Well, that's clearly what they're banking on.
Yeah.
That's clearly what they have banked.
And I trust Brett Veach as a GM. So like
their offseason on, you know, I mean, that's very, very evident with how they approach the offseason. I will say though, and it almost feels like we're talking about top 5. Who gives a damn if they're a top 5 offense? How about just being a top 10 offense? Right now we're watching an offense that is struggling, and we just saw the first half the way it is. They're a very average offense right now. I know it feels like people watching them think they're the worst offense in football. They're not.
No,
they're
Patrick not. Mahomes is like the 13th most efficient quarterback in the NFL. I'm like,
it's
really?
Because of what we're used to in Kansas City. And so it feels like they're the worst offense in football, but I can promise you they are not. And I can promise you they're not even a bottom 5 offense in football. They're not. It just feels that way because of the expectation, understandably so, and it should be better. You have Patrick Mahomes, you have Andy Reid, you have Matt Nagy, you've got an offensive line you've invested all this money in. We mentioned the wide receivers, now they haven't all been together yet. You've got too much invested in the offense for it not to be better than what it has. But I think sometimes we watch the game and because of what we have seen in the past and we know what championship offense caliber offense looks like, it feels like they're one of the worst offenses in football. They're just not. But it's not good enough to win a Super Bowl. It's not good enough to win a division right now. That's
if these
sure.
wide receivers aren't good enough to get them firmly in the top 10 and flirting with the top 5 offensively, well, it's time to put some real investment in wide receiver. To this point, the only thing they've done is draft pick selection. They paid no one. No one. They've made a first-round pick. That was the biggest investment they've made now in Worthy. A couple of second-round picks. One has obviously worked out when he plays in Rashee Rice. And one that didn't work out in Sky Moore. I will say, part of this is, and this is a weird thing that I felt like we probably could have spent more time on, knowing that they're 1-2 with a chance to go 1-3 against Baltimore, it makes me angry at Rashee Rice's decision-making. It shouldn't be this hard, man. Thanks for setting us back. You know, like, some of it is like,
oh, no doubt. He let the team down. There's no question. Now, I will also go back to the conversation we had last Tuesday, I think, where there was, I think it was Dan Graziano was mentioning how he was hearing that those inside the Chiefs organization were frustrated with the lack of availability of wide receivers. And we went one by one and like, hey, some of this was a little predictable.
You drafted some frail guys.
When you signed Hollywood Brown, you knew the injury risk in history. When you drafted Xavier Worthy, you knew what size he was, right? In terms of maybe the issues that in terms of staying healthy he could have. Now, in fairness to Worthy, we're literally talking about one injury since he's been in the league, I think.
And he's missed 2 games, right. And he might be back this
might
week.
Be it. So. And then Rice, there were some teams that had him off the draft board because of some off-the-field stuff. So they can't be completely caught off guard. But you are right. Yes, did he let this team down 1,000%? He let this team down with his decision-making, and he's paying the price for it on the football field right now. And obviously off the field, he's got some consequences he's going to have to deal with still as well.
It doesn't work this way because you see the players on the field. We should give him as much gripe as any of the players on the field who you see, or more, that you see fail. All we do is talk about how Jawan Taylor keeps letting this team down. Rashee let him down more. He's not even available. Yeah, he can't even get a false start. He's not on the field. And so, like, you know, like, that part, and it's hard because I get it, Gold. We're watching a football team. It's much easier to talk about the players who are letting you down in front of your eyes. I get all of that part. And, like, for Chris Jones, like, a couple years ago when it felt like he let the Chiefs down because he didn't play in a football game, but we understood it was business. It's also like, that was a weird visual. We don't see Rashee Rice sitting up in the box, hanging out, waiting for a suspension. He's out of sight, out of mind in a lot of ways. I'm still clinging, maybe mistakenly, to some hope. And I still do think that there's a 10 or 15 or 20% chance this is the fifth best offense in the NFL when all those guys return. I understand that it is probably pie in the sky and thinking, and I'm not saying it's more likely than not they aren't, but I still feel like there's some world in which I want to believe in that this is all close to clicking.
Yeah, I don't think they have to.
A month from now.
I don't think they even have to be a top five offense. Get them to where they're the 8th to 10th best offense with all those guys back, if that's even in play. And I think everything will be just fine at that point in time. But it's a big if, obviously. All right, let's talk about some of the teams that have had no issues getting wins so far 3 weeks into the season. Now, these are not all the 3-0 teams. I want to eliminate the Eagles and Bills for this conversation because I think they would be the clear answer. What 3-0 team has been most impressive to you guys in the text line, 913-586-7965, because I want to narrow down to the Niners, the Chargers, the Bucks, and the Colts. Again, okay. I understand that the Bills and the Eagles are also 3-0.
But two teams who are pretty good every year.
Yeah, and we've talked about the Eagles plenty, and we've obviously talked about the Bills plenty on their own, and we're all well aware, and the Chiefs just played the Eagles 2 weeks ago. 49ers, Chargers, Bucks, Colts. The Chiefs have the Colts on the schedule later this year. They have the Chargers, again, on the schedule. They won't play the Bucks. They won't play the 49ers. Who's been most impressive? And I'm not even saying necessarily you think that they're going to end up in the Super Bowl or anything like that. But in terms of impressive, some of that goes with expectation, what they've overcome. What's most impressive for you? I think it gets narrowed down to two teams for me. Colts are the most shocking. I don't know if they're the most impressive. It's just we didn't expect a damn thing from them. So that's why it's like, I don't know if it's most impressive, even though I gave some credit to Shane Steichen, I told you yesterday or two days ago. For me, the most impressive is actually the 49ers. They got a backup quarterback winning them two games. Mac Jones is out here winning them games. Their wide receiver room, they had to sign Sky Moore. They had to sign MVS.
They just lost Nick Bosa for the season.
Well, they haven't played without him yet. But yes, they lost him and they're 3-0. We'll see what happens. I actually think impressive because of the issues with health has been the 49ers. The Chargers, to me, look like a better football team, though, if that makes sense, than San Francisco. But I've been most impressed with what Kyle Shanahan has done with the Niners, with having Mac Jones start two games for them. And it's not as if their wide receiver room is great either with all the injuries. So for me, the 49ers would be the most impressive out of that group.
I actually think it might be the Bucks for me, who take on the Eagles, by the way, in a battle of 3-0s in a noon slated game this Sunday, which is weird for two 3-0 teams who have been having success in the NFC. I understand he still has weapons. I'm not trying to pretend like Godwin being gone has somehow stopped them from also having Egbuka and having Evans until he got hurt in the previous game and everything in between. They are more shorthanded than the elite level teams that we had mentioned, as in like the Eagles and the Bills. They have suffered through more injuries and had to deal with more. And they are the cardiac kids. They have to like come from behind in every game and make magic happen late. I think what's impressed me the most about them is Baker is firmly settled into a top 10 quarterback and one of arguably the most clutch quarterbacks in the NFL. He makes things happen that a lot of other quarterbacks don't. And that has consistently stood out to me amongst their ability to constantly find weapons. Bucky Irving and Luka.
New OC.
They just make guys work, roll guys in, have no trouble. I have been impressed by the 49ers' ability to win, but their schedule has been, I mean, not exactly murderer's row, has it?
Yeah, I mean, Bucks just played the Jets, but I hear you. I think the 49ers' schedule has definitely been softer. Now, they just had a divisional game against a Cardinals team that was playing well going in. They played a divisional team in Seattle. And then, yes, the Saints would be the one you look at and say, okay.
Yeah, but I guess I'm not overly blown away by those, but you're right. They did just face the Jets.
The reason
and the Texans, who are now 0-3, and the Falcons, who are... So it's not like their schedule's been tough either.
With the Bucks, I guess the reason why I probably don't answer most impressive is because I had very high expectation for them going in. I had Baker Mayfield as an MVP candidate. I have the Bucks in the NFC title game against the Packers preseason. So that's probably why I don't view them as the most impressive, because I think they're pretty damn good anyway heading into the year. The 49ers, I did not think they would be 3-0. Obviously, the Colts are the biggest shock. I don't think they're the most impressive because I don't believe it. I believe that they can compete and win their division. I don't believe with Daniel Jones, as great as he looks, and give him credit, he's been awesome, that they're actual threat in the AFC. And I don't know if you disagree, Drew, but that's where I'm at on the Colts. And then the Chargers, as I said, like I've been very, very impressed with them. They to me are the Chargers and the Bucks are the two best teams of this grouping. But the Niners have just overcome more than any of these other teams.
Agreed. And like, so, and everyone's schedule apparently is easy out of these secondary tier 0-3 teams. Because the Colts, two of their wins are against what I assume will be number one and number two picks in the draft, in the Miami Dolphins and the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
So, okay, You got the two worst teams in the league, and then you got a Broncos team who has Bo Nix playing terrible, and you should have lost that game. So it's like, I don't want to take away anything from them. They're 3-0. They have been the biggest NFL surprise this year. But there are parts of their game that I'm still like, okay, we'll see. You know, the 49ers, it's like, if you can just keep surviving these injuries until Purdy and Kittle come back, you might give yourself enough of a leeway that maybe you can battle into it. They still have some weapons. They still, and you know, like,
they have
they're
the
kind of like the Steelers.
Week.
They just win.
This is their schedule, though. I mean, the Niners, they're going to get tested here quick.
Oh, yeah.
Jags, Rams, Bucks. That's the next three. You know, we're going to, you know, can they overcome the injuries against that quality of opponent if you're worried about their strength of schedule and, like, are they real now? We're going to find out more about the San Francisco 49ers. A couple people on the Jay Saflin Toast Service text line said the Colts are most shocking, Chargers most impressive.
Three divisional wins is impressive.
Someone says their Colts are plus 47 through three games in terms of point differential. I don't care who you're playing. That's pretty damn good. Oh, yeah, the Colts have been great. I just don't think with Daniel Jones, it goes back to the QB conversation for me. But, you know, I guess, I mean, you can't be impressed, I guess. I just, for me to be super impressed, I have to think also that you're going to do something with it. And the Colts, to me, are at best a division winner this year. And that's an amazing accomplishment, and nobody would have predicted that.
In
that's
fairness,
awesome
do we think
Steichen,
any of these teams are going to do anything?
Well, I mean, I think the Bucs are in the NFC title game.
Yeah, you did pick that. I don't know if anybody else did.
I don't think the Colts are going anywhere deep. I don't think...
I could see the Niners going on a run.
How am I counting the Niners out? Do you realize they've played in like half the Super Bowls in the last decade? People forget about that because they didn't win any of them. They have, and I'm not... I mean, I don't know if that's the exact number. It's dangerously close. I think they've played in like 5 of the last 10 Super Bowls or 4 of the last 10 and like 7 of the last 10 NFC championship games. So like, I'm definitely not discounting the 49ers, what they do. And the Chargers, it's just, if they keep
doing
this,
Charger?
If they keep doing this, I will think they will do something. I wouldn't predict it today, but if they continue it, there's at least 3 of those 4 that I would like take serious, I guess, in that, including the Bucks. The Colts are the only one that I'm like,
so look, I think
they could go 15-2 and I'd still be like, they're losing in the divisional round. Like, I'm sorry.
Even
Colts.
If they went 15-2,
yeah,
you would say that?
Yeah, I just, I'd never
talk
about
it. Because of Daniel Jones?
Yeah. It would be the Blake Bortles year. I'd be like,
I think,
okay,
no, I would
good
just compare
luck,
him
nice
to,
seeing you.
I just compare him to the Vikings from last year is what I think what would happen. It's the Sam Darnold thing. Daniel Jones is going to earn himself some serious cash by playing the way he is this year. And there is still going to be at some point when it matters most, either late in the year or if they make the playoffs in the first playoff game, there's a chance he turns back into a pumpkin.
I just think that, so part of it, because originally I was going to say the Chargers, but I don't think you can include the Bucs as impressive in this conversation, Gold, because you picked them to go to the NFC title. Like, I don't think...
That's why I said I didn't choose them.
Yeah. This is where you're just, not that this is what you expected, but this is kind of where it just falls into line with what your expectation was. Yep. So for me, I think it's between the Chargers and the Colts more, and I think it actually is, I've talked myself into the Colts. I was going to say Chargers, but the reason I say the Colts is...
Your hometown team.
Yes, yeah, they are the hometown team. I also think that
rise up, Indy.
They're not only top, so they're tied for first in terms of points per game with the Lions. They also are top four. They're fourth in passing yards per game. They're third in rushing yards per game. They're like top 5 in total yards per game. So the fact that I know that this is Daniel Jones' turn, they might be like the Vikings. I don't know where they were offensively with Sam Darnold last year, but the fact that they're where they're at ranking-wise amidst the rest of the NFL, I think, gives me more reason to say I'm actually impressed with
the
Colts compared to...
Dolphins, Broncos, Titans.
They are surprising, but I think...
The Saints started 2-1 last year, and then it was a disaster. And the one loss was a really tight one to the Eagles. So you'd have been like saying the same thing about the Saints 3 games in, you know?
I understand that, but they were not... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they were top 4 in passing, rushing, and
they won 47-10 week 1, 44-19 week 2. They definitely were right there, the Saints.
We were talking about Kubiak. Remember the OC and how great of a job he was doing.
That doesn't mean that it's not impressive, though. So I think, if we're talking through 3 games, the team that's most impressive, I think it's still the Colts, also most surprising just because of the expectations we had for the Bucs, and some would say the 49ers given the schedule too.
All right, up next, let's talk to Ross Tucker. We'll ask him that same question as well, and also what Ross Tucker saw from the Chiefs, and we look ahead to the Ravens game this Sunday right here on Cody and Gold.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Just getting started here on a Wednesday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to some changes in Major League Baseball here in about 12 minutes or so. Finally happening, if you've been paying attention during spring training or back even with our road trip we took to Springfield with some minor league baseball as well, you know something's been going on there for at least a year or so. It's now finally going to come to baseball next year, so we'll discuss that in just a bit. But let's talk some NFL with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. I'll ask you what we were just discussing in the prior segment, Ross. We were going through some of these 3-0 teams. Take the Bills and Eagles out of it, but between the Niners, Chargers, Bucks, Colts, who's been the most impressive to you?
The Colts. Yeah, I would say the Colts. I got a chance to see them, a lot of them on Sunday,
yeah,
because I called that game Colts-Titans. You know, and I know the Dolphins and the Titans aren't very good, but, I mean, they beat both those teams by 25 points. Like, that is super, super hard to do in the NFL, as you guys know. I mean, think about how good the Chiefs have been in recent years. Not many times they've been blowing teams out like that. And, you know, think even like the Titans had the lead late in the third quarter in Denver against the Broncos, you know, against the Rams, two teams that made the playoffs last year. That game against the Colts was never close. I mean, that you know, that they were losing by two scores at least pretty much the whole game. So it just speaks to the Colts. Now, I don't think that they're great on defense. I think they're probably just okay. But offensively, man, I mean, their O-line's playing awesome. Jonathan Taylor is the best running back in football right now. You know, Kyler Warren is like a top five tight end. And I think because of that, it helps their other receivers, Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce. You know, those guys have always been good players, maybe not great players, but because of all the focus on Taylor and Warren, it's like those guys are getting even more attention. And, you know, I think Steichen's just so happy their head coach to have a quarterback that just runs the offense, that just knows what to do, runs the offense to the point where, you know, Daniel Jones is operating at a very, very high level right now.
Generally speaking about offenses, what do you think's going on there again in the league? Because, like, look, the Chiefs don't look good. They're missing a lot of their weapons, so maybe that's part of it. But, like, even your Philadelphia Eagles, that's not a fun offense to watch either. Yards per game are down. Is this just the defenses are caught up, we need to wait a month? It just seems like, in general, offense has not been that enjoyable around the NFL.
Well, you're 1,000% correct. Although, I will say, like, if you watch the Ravens-Lions on Monday night,
yeah,
you know, sure, those offenses are still pretty awesome. And there's other teams as well. But I think it's a couple things. You know, they finally figured out a couple years ago that you really are only going to get really shredded if you're giving up explosive plays. So almost everybody is playing, you know, some form of what they call shell coverage with two deep safeties or cover four or whatever, where they really are not going to let you get passes over 20 yards. It's going to be very difficult to do that. And so what you have to do is be super patient and move the ball down the field, you know, taking the underneath stuff. The problem with that is I think especially the first month of the season, since these guys don't play in the preseason at all, they're going to make a mistake. you know, there's going to be a penalty, motion or illegal shift or a hold, or it really is hard to go 10 plus play drives, which is what they're now forcing you to do. So they're forcing you to go the long way, which a lot of teams aren't capable of doing. And then even if you are and you get down there, a lot of times they're doing a better job of making you settle for field goals. And so it's hard. It's really hard.
We're talking to our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, here on 96.5 The Fan. What did you make of the Chiefs' performance? An ugly, ugly first half, obviously. And then that opening drive to start the second half, they kind of settled in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I thought of it was they finally at least got something going. And I think probably that maybe the best thing is that, you know, this Thornton guy looks like a real guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of just in the nick of time where they need him. And I don't know when Worthy's coming back, maybe this week or whatever. And we know there's still a few weeks before Rashee Rice, but very valuable that Thornton actually looks like a player for them because they desperately need that to open up the stuff for Kelce and Pacheco and those guys underneath a little bit more.
When you look at what the Chiefs are doing, like we asked a question to ourselves, do you think it's still fair to say, hey, let's make a judgment on the Chiefs offense until Worthy and Rice come back? Or are they looking, struggling enough that that's a hard sentence to keep selling?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I think it's a combination of what I said about the first month of the season. Although, interestingly, as you know, the Chiefs actually play their starters more than almost every other team these days, which is wild. You know, like, because you think about it, think of all teams, do the Chiefs only need to play in the preseason? It's the same guys in the same system this entire time, but yet they do. So you would think that they would be further ahead from that standpoint. But I do think every team, there's an ebb and flow with every team every season. You know, if you remember, the Eagles were 2-2 after week 4 last year and had lost to the Bucs by 3 scores. Well, guys, they haven't lost a game that Jalen Hurts has finished since then. I mean, it's 20 games. It's a full year. They have not lost the game that Hurts finished since then. They've only lost one period. It was the Commanders game where he got hurt in the first quarter. All of which is to say, the concussion, you know, the first month really means very, very little for how we feel about these teams at the end of the year. I really do think a lot of these times these teams are just trying to figure it out in the first month. And then, you know, what you start to see the progress month 2, 3, and 4. I think that'll naturally be the case with the Chiefs. And then obviously getting Worthy and Price should have a big impact on it.
You mentioned the Ravens a minute or so ago, and obviously that offense has been great. Despite a 1-2 start, the Chiefs are also 1-2, but it feels like the way everybody talks about the Chiefs is so much different than the Ravens. You know, why do you think that is? Is it because everybody loves offense and points? Like, the Ravens' defense, of course, has been a problem. The Chiefs' offense has been a problem, but their defenses look good. Why do you feel like people discuss the Ravens as if everything's going to be all right, but with the Chiefs, there's way more concern?
That's a great question. I do think it's because they see the Ravens still scoring 30 points in those losses and having, you know, unfortunate, let's call them Derrick Henry fumbles. But it's like the Chiefs don't get credit for how well their defense is played for whatever reason. I think the Ravens are better than the Chiefs. I think the Ravens are a really, really good team. But you are what your record says you are. You know, I don't care about like the yards per play stats and all these metrics. The Ravens are always so great in all these metrics, and then they lose the games they need to win.
Right. Yeah.
Which is ultimately all that matters. Like, is anybody taking the Ravens over the Chiefs in a playoff game? I don't think so. I don't think anybody's taking the Ravens over the Bills in a playoff game. I don't have a great explanation for it, because I feel like they have the talent and the personnel and the coaching and all that to do it, but they don't. They have some real issues on defense right now in Baltimore. they have too many good players to be this bad on defense. And so I don't know if they make a coaching change or what happens, but they got to figure that out.
The biggest storyline that came out not involving the Chiefs out of that game was that Jackson Dart is going to make his debut for the New York Giants. Are you surprised they made the shift this early, or is it just after Russell Wilson put three into the seats, they didn't really have much of a choice there at the end of the game?
Well, I guess they had a choice. You know, it's funny because the way I look at it is it's really just the head coach and the GM trying to figure out the best way to save their job.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I think initially it was, hey, we should have a pretty good defense. If Russell Wilson plays like he did in Pittsburgh, maybe we can go 500, right? And if that doesn't go well, then we could put Jackson Dart in. I think they wanted to try to give the Russell Wilson thing as much of a chance as they could, because I think they know with Jackson Dart, they're probably not going to be 500. You know, they're probably not going to make the playoffs or have a great record. The Jackson Dart thing would be more like, hey, we're showing a lot of momentum with this rookie quarterback. You don't want to mess with this. You know, we got a good thing going. I think they probably thought maybe they had a better chance to have that momentum, like if it was a 6 or 8 week thing, as opposed to a 14 week thing. You know, 14 week thing, it could be like he gets off to a good start, but then teams figure him out a little bit. In the last few weeks of the season, he looks like crap and they still get fired.
I guess for me, Ross, this is part of the issue, like, that I don't like when people are like, oh, you know football better than the people running teams, because this is maybe the fifth quarterback in the last 2 or 3 years that has been handled the exact same way. And I think it's the worst way to handle a quarterback, which is we keep lame duck head coach. We let him screw with young quarterback. We then in year 2 or 3, give him new offensive coordinator, new head coach, new system, force him into relearning it again, and then hope this time it's better. I don't understand why this is a trend in the NFL. Why are they allowing these coaches to screw with the young quarterbacks?
Yeah, well, I think you got to take it on a case-by-case basis. I would agree with you with the Giants. I thought that was a really poor decision. That they also, by the way, didn't know when and where they would draft a quarterback, right? You know, it's the other teams that have the higher picks that's more interesting, like the Titans at number one. But I don't know. I mean, you hire Brian Callahan, and his quarterback last year was Will Levis. I don't think anybody actually thinks that Levis is a good quarterback. So then the point would be, well, let's give Cam Ward a chance. You know, let's give this guy a chance with a legit quarterback, and that quarterback is Cam Ward. And, you know, Callahan was there with Burrow in Cincinnati and blah, blah, blah. And maybe they will turn it around. But that's the logic, I think, with a coach like Callahan or a situation like Tennessee. I don't understand the Giants' decision. I never did.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy some football this weekend. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. See you guys.
There you go. Ross Tucker joins us each and every Wednesday here on Cody and Gold. Talking about the Ravens a little bit there with him as well. The defense is what everybody's trying to figure out. And because
are they really this bad? But yeah. I also don't think the Chiefs offense is this bad. Now might be this bad until they get the weapons back, in fairness. So like maybe an issue, but like the Ravens defense is a sieve.
Well, and it's a trend because last year they stunk as well. They were bad in the secondary last year. This isn't just a this year through three games thing. They were struggling last year. They eventually turned it around, but they were bad last year.
They got off to a slow start as well. I think what I loved when he said, though, the metric stuff, because that has been like a 3 year running thing with the Ravens where, well, they're graded.
People love them on paper.
DVOA and EPA and all these things. And we talked about this last year, heading into the game. Even then, that was in week two of the season, I think it was, right? They played week one, sorry, of the season, and the whole Isaiah Likely thing. But then as the season went on, the Chiefs were winning all these one-score games. Nationally, the conversation was, well, the Ravens are better because EPA, DVOA, and all this. And yet then in the playoffs, they lost to the Bills. And then the year before, they obviously lost to Kansas City. And so I don't know what the regular season matchup will be, but it's at some point you do have to win games. And the same thing I would be saying for the Chiefs. If there's a metric that says they're just fine, well, at some point they have to win football games. The Ravens for years, though, have been viewed on paper as the best team or top three team in football. And yet when they have to get big wins playoff time, they don't do it.
They have a little bit of a, the last I'd say this year more so, is if they don't keep winning, then it turns into like the Chargers thing. Like, that's the, I thought, I said before the season, that's the best roster in football, what the Ravens possess. But if they're 1-3, I was wrong. The players that you love lauding as being aren't. I said this about the Chargers for years. They would just do nothing, be like, look at Derwin James and Bosa. And these guys, I'm like, are they that good? Defense ranks 21st every year. So somebody stinks on that defense. So, like, should we talk about that or lead into it? I think what might be happening with the Ravens is this year is some of it is they have players people like on paper, but they're not as good as people perceived, and they don't want to admit it, that they're not as good as they are just yet. Now, look,
now, I think
this game is going to swing the narrative for either team. We already said it.
Yes.
It's going to either be the Ravens are fine or the Chiefs are fine is how people are going to feel coming out of this game. I don't even think it matters if it's 40-39 either way or 13-10 either way. I do think that that will be the narrative on either team.
Madubuike, if he's back for the Ravens, that's a huge addition if in fact he's back. And I think Kyle Hamilton is one of the best safeties in football. He's awesome. But the rest of the area has been disappointing, I think, for the Ravens defense. Thanks to Ross Tucker for joining us. He'll be he's going to be doing another Titans game this weekend. I was looking at the CBS broadcast assignments. I couldn't get
a lot of Cam Ward.
I couldn't get it pulled up in time before we had it to move on. But we when talking with him, but yeah, he's doing the Colts or excuse me, the Titans Texans game, an 0-3 matchup. The Texans in danger of going 0-4 and the season being truly over at that point in time.
I just like this idea of equity sometimes in sports never makes sense to me. Well, you know, Callahan was handcuffed with Will Levis. Let's give him a shot with a real quarterback and see how it is. Yeah. Look at Dable is a perfect example of that. Well, he's saddled with Daniel Jones. Let's give him Russ Jackson Dart and see what he does with that. Daniel Jones was 3-0.
Yeah,
was he the problem, or was it Brian Dable or Brian Callahan or all these other coaches who have a second chance at
the
quarterback?
The issue is their ownership group, because the GM and the coach are trying to save their job. They're both connected. Yeah. So the minute the ownership decided to keep them, then the GM and coach were going to make moves that they thought potentially could make them good enough, essentially, right? They thought Russell Wilson would make them good enough to keep their job. Now they're all praying that Brian Dable can work with Jackson Dart and make it good enough to keep their job. I don't think it will be good enough starting on Sunday. And I think Jackson Dart will end up being possibly a decent player in this league, but I don't know if he's going to do enough to save their job in his first starts. I mean, someone was putting out the stats, even in Giants history. I think Eli Manning started 0-5, you know? Okay, yeah. It doesn't mean it can't turn out fine at the end. Obviously, it did. He won two rings for them. But at first, I mean, there's a chance Jackson Dart starts 0-5 in his NFL career.
I will say, I did forget the Eagles started 2-2 last year. I forgot that they started kind of rocky. And I just mentioned one of those wins was a 15-12 win against the Saints. So, you know, not exactly like an impressive one in the first three either.
All right, let's transition a little bit to baseball. The news came out towards the end of the show yesterday. I think we've been talking about this since spring training that it was likely going to happen. I'm thrilled to see it. That is the ABS system, automated ball strike system, that has been utilized in spring training. It was, if you went on a road trip with us to Springfield, you saw it there in action. I was up in Omaha, saw it there. They've been doing it in the minor league system. Essentially, you know, you're going to be able to have an appeal system. You know, now the pitcher, the catcher, or the batter can be involved in this at the time. So that it's not like the manager can. It has to be the very quickly those three players involved at that certain time have an appeals process. You only get a certain amount for each team, and
you can retain them if you get them right.
And it's very quick. So if you haven't been to a minor league game to see it, it is all of a sudden Salvador Perez is in the batter's box. It's a pitch called a strike. And he's like, no. He taps his helmet real quick. The ump says, oh, okay, hold up. And everybody kind of stares at the Jumbotron. It shows like anything you would see, like a K-zone animation.
Tennis.
And it's the same thing as whatever they call that in tennis.
Eagle eye or whatever it is.
Yeah. And it's over. Then the ump says, basically, you know, he hops on the mic real quick and says the call, you know, it's a strike or ball, whatever, the call stands, and everybody moves on. It's just like that. It's a great thing. I'm very excited about this, especially after watching some baseball last night where I was like, I was watching the Reds game because the Reds are trying to hang on to a playoff spot. They lost. But there must have been 15 bad strike calls in the game.
I told you, Jeff Passanson had a highlight video of a game this week in which an umpire missed, according to ABS, 25 calls. This will not solve umpiring in the zone. I've said this before. This isn't even meant to be a knock on the job they do. Do you know how hard it is to watch a ball breaking 12 inches, going 94 miles an hour, to see if it crossed an invisible barrier? It's an impossible job. No one's meant to be able. The human eye is not designed.
I love the to this handle system,
this
job. Though.
This is perfect because every ball and strike doesn't have to be this way, but you get to be like, I know the zone. Prove it. And then it adds drama and it adds intrigue. Mm. And you get to, like, other talking points. Let's just say a guy for the Tigers calls for it and it's actually a ball. We get to be like, what are you wasting? You don't even know the strike zone. Adds fodder to the game, which is important.
It's going to be great for Vern's postgame show next year. You know, there's going to be someone calling in complaining why did Vinny Pasquantino not challenge that one in the fifth inning and the bases were loaded or whatever, right? Like, there's going to be those conversations, which will be fun. I see a few people texting in, say, let the robot system. Everyone. I disagree with that. So this is where I'm at. I will say, as much as I love ABS, I really don't want it going a step further, and that would be the only thing. Like, I want this to be it. I do not want us to get to a fully automated system, because I still have talked about this. I've talked about the human element of sports, and I know we all want things to be right and perfect and everything like that. I still understand, as you described, how difficult it is to do. There is still a human element to baseball. Part of watching baseball and is the controversy of us, you know, bitching and moaning that it was a bad call or whatever. There is still some of that I want. So I like the appeal process, because when it matters most, we can ensure they get it right. Right? You can tap a helmet, and the pitcher also, by the way, the pitcher thinks he got screwed. He can challenge too. We keep using it as a hitter thing, but the pitcher and catcher can say, no, we got squeezed or whatever it might be on that particular strike call.
As you know, I've moved away from replay, is that I want less of it. Finally, a replay that actually rights a wrong. My problem with replay in general in sports has been, it doesn't seem like it corrects the mistakes enough. As in, we're like, did he make a catch? Was the ball foul? I've watched them call a ball foul that was clearly fair for the Royals in replay in the last calendar year. So, like, my frustration was, are you getting it right enough? This one's pretty simple. It is black and white. It is right or wrong. There is no messing it up. I like that there's recourse for something to be wrong.
Sure.
That can be challenged. That you have a right. If they went to full-time, I wouldn't throw a fit. Am I fine with this current system of everybody just taps their helmet a couple times a game? Yeah, it works for me. Big time moments, big time games. The idea that a 3-2 pitch is a borderline call, or a 2-2 pitch that they call strike three, and it's bases loaded in the sixth inning or the eighth inning of a tie baseball game, and he gets to tap his helmet, he's like, no, it's actually 3-2. Ooh, I get the pitch again. I like the drama of it. That's the human element I like. It can add drama.
Yeah, this is a great step forward. I'm just saying, I really am not a fan if they went to full automated strike zone, because then at that point you truly are almost just playing a video game at that point. Like, there is no discrepancy. It is just black and white on that. And I know some people want that to be the case, I guess, for strikes and balls, but there is still part of it where I don't want a baseball game. There's basically, you know, the ump is chilling back there. And he's never calling strikes and never calling balls. And it's just this automated system is just triggering. Like, the ump is just going to have an earpiece in the future. And he has to go through the motions of emotionally calling his guy out. And he's not even the one that made the call, technically. Like, what are we going to just all look at the Jumbotron after every pitch to find out? Like, I don't want it to be fully automated. This is perfect.
This is way better than we've had. I don't care if you want the full version or not. This is better. Finally, I can't believe it took this long. I understand the system's imperfect, so it took them a while to build it. If you've watched it, as Gold mentioned, if you've been to any minor league game or watch any minor league game, it's perfect. It's so easy and simple and functional.
All right, up next, we get back to the NFL, whether or not the Chiefs need Worthy. I think it's a fairly simple answer at this point in time, but do they need him on Sunday? And the Royals were officially eliminated last night.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.